Excuse us.
Pardon me, ma'am.
Sorry.
Move it, asshole.
Oh, thank God. We got good seats.
Damn right we did. What's up? We got the drinks.
We got the popcorn.
And the candy.
I think we're ready, man.
Hey, guys. Sorry I'm late. The bathroom here is nuts.
Oh, my God. You made it. Yay.
It's about time, Nathan. Damn.
Shh. The movie's starting.
I'm Mally Moore, and I don't want to spend this whole episode tied to this fucking couch.
I'm Nathan Simmons, and I can't believe I forgot the best line read of the movie.
And I'm Dustin Goes Hollywood, who's trying to get his thussy ate. And this is the Silver Linings Playlist.
Wow.
Wait.
The podcast that tries to find out who among us is not really among us.
Wait. Mm. So we're just going to let that go, Nathan?
Is that how we're getting Zoomers to listen to this episode, is to tell them that Among Us is tangentially similar?
You know what's funny is Priscilla and I were going to watch this movie, and we were trying to tell our 8-year-old daughter, like, do you want to watch this movie with us? And mm-hmm. to describe it to her, we were like, it's kind of like Among Us, but in the snow.
I mean, not wrong completely.
That's actually incredibly accurate.
It's pretty close.
There is a spaceship in this movie.
There is.
Yeah.
But this is the Silver Linings Playlist, a podcast that tries to find the silver lining in some of cinema's bleakest endings. And of course, this is our season 5 finale.
Yeah.
And guys, this was hinted at all along, all the way back to the season 5 teaser.
Yeah. Right.
We told you guys straight up, we're doing the thing.
Even though we hadn't decided it.
Yeah.
And just, I have fully committed to this. I have been growing my hair out and my beard for the better part of a year in preparation for this episode.
Oh, I have diabetes now.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
I have an earring.
Diabetes.
And just to be clear, I have never trusted either of you.
Oh, no.
And not just because of all the dead dogs in my house.
Diabetes.
I guess that's a good question we should get to at some point, is who do we think we most correspond to in this movie? Who do we think best represents how we would go out in this movie?
Oh,
you got your answer already? Go ahead.
Yeah, I got mine. I'm Palmer. I'm like the conspiracy nut who thinks he's a lot more useful than he actually is.
DC, who are you, bud?
I think I might be Gary.
Yeah.
I'm like, shoot first, ask questions later, and then just point the gun on everybody. Like, I don't trust any of you guys.
Right.
What about you, Mally?
Oh, I'm the thing.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. You know, I was thinking about it this watch, like when we see the spaceship that Wilford Brimley built.
Oh my God.
Just imagining him like crammed into it.
Yes. I had that same note. I was like, can you imagine Wilford Brimley puttering around this little spaceship? I imagine it's gotta be like the Jetsons, like
all I could think about was the first Iron Man.
Sure.
Tony Stark built this in a cave with a box of scraps.
If we got to see Wilford Brimley in that tiny spaceship, that would be the character I would be.
Oh, man. Amazing.
You know how like a lot of 80s movies that were not meant for kids ended up becoming kids cartoons?
Yeah.
Like RoboCop and stuff like that and Rambo.
Oh, sure.
Where's my Thing cartoon? Why can't I get Wilford Brimley in a little spaceship?
Like you want a like Jetsons-esque cartoon about The Thing.
MacReady and the Things.
Oh, what a theme. You know those theme songs were rocking back then on those 80s cartoons.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Mama MacReady and the Things.
Oof.
Having adventures in the snowy Arctic.
This writes itself. We don't have to do anything. It's there.
Yeah, this is amazing.
We got
it's basically just Benny and the Jets.
Like, I was going to say, and it's about as much energy as that put into those 80s theme songs, too.
Well, there was that Swamp Thing cartoon that was just Wild Thing with the lyrics changed.
Oh, my God, yeah.
For the theme song.
Yeah.
And it was brilliant.
It was great.
Speaking of wild things, this thing is pretty wild in this movie, guys.
Pretty wild. First things first.
We had another thing coming. We had to do this movie for our season 5 finale. It just, it's Christmas time. Christmas just passed when this episode dropped. So we're still there in those Arctic days that we'll probably never see again. But, you know, we can imagine. Like, it's 80 degrees here in Florida. But
it's a nice, cool 65 here. So
my hands are sweating right now.
Well, that's for another reason. But.
Well, yeah, it's,
your hands are always sweating.
It's because I'm here with my guys.
Yeah. Man, this would have been the best episode to get around in a group, turn the lights off, get some hot chocolate, get up on the couch under some blankets, watch the movie. Because, man, that's what I did.
Mm-hmm. Like, wait, the three of us?
Yeah, dude, one long blanket, and I'm in for it.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, no, this was a weighted blanket hot chocolate movie for me, too, actually.
It's a cozy time. This is a comfort movie, which it should not be because of how horrific it is.
It's so bleak. Like, you want to talk about bleak endings.
Like, that says a lot about us.
Maybe it does. Yeah, but am I wrong? Like, do you guys not agree? Like, this is just a movie that's comforting for some reason?
It is. It is weirdly comforting. Like, I watched this for the first time in high school, and it's one of those that every time I go back, I kind of remember, like, oh, yeah, like, I watched this with my girlfriend at the time, and it, like, scared the shit out of me. I couldn't believe how insane the effects were. And it was like a touchstone thing for me.
And then she ate my head.
And then she killed me.
And I've been the thing all along under disguise.
And I'm actually, yeah, exactly.
Oh my God, Nathan.
Nathan. Yeah. This is a nostalgic fave for me, for sure.
Yeah.
And it helps that it is also genuinely one of the best movies ever.
Oh, hands down. I mean, when Ennio Morricone's score kicks in at the beginning here, just the dum-dum. Dum,
that
dum.
Razzie nominated score, baby.
I can't believe it. The Razzies get fuck right off. Like, right off.
Well, this movie was hated when it came out. I mean, Roger Ebert called it instant... No, Vincent Canby called it instant junk.
Yeah.
Roger Ebert called it a moron movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people taught at the time were even just like, the effects are gross and stupid.
Well, didn't it come out the same week as E.T.?
It came out the same summer as E.T. It came out the same day as Blade Runner. So if you want to talk about two movies that got shit on unfairly at the same time.
Yes. I think because we were still trying to figure out what the 80s were going to be.
Sure.
Like, we had Halloween, and everybody was trying to cash in on that. And then John Carpenter, poor guy, like, to... He even says this is his best movie. I think I might agree.
I agree.
To not get the respect he deserves back
then. What's so insane is there was this weird backlash against Carpenter in the 80s. Like, yeah. He comes out of the gate with Halloween and Escape from New York and Assault on Precinct 13.
So
three
good.
Pretty undeniably fantastic thrillers.
So good. All three of those are good.
So he was given a big budget to make this. He had a 5-picture deal at Universal. Like, everyone was interested in the John Carpenter business.
Yeah.
And this movie comes out, critics shit all over it. Audiences are like, no, we like the nice alien from earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if Universal buys him out of his contract, it becomes harder for him to get work, like, immediately after this. It's baffling.
Yeah, as much as I love directors, I like getting those big picture deals. It's also kind of like, man, you gotta really tread that line carefully.
Too. Sure. It wasn't until Starman that he kind of bounced back because it showed he could make like a crowd pleaser again.
Yeah. No, I think this might be my favorite Carpenter movie. And by the way, you mentioned everybody wanted to be in the Carpenter business.
Yeah.
I'm still in on the Carpenter
Me
business.
Too.
If he decides to come out and direct another movie, I'll be there day one.
I feel like Jason Blum's been trying to make that happen for a while, but like they haven't come to terms on anything. Carpenter's like, yeah, this is worth the money and the time for me to like stop. Because this guy's loving his retirement. I mean, he's just writing.
He's living his best life right now.
Oh, yeah. Like, he comes out every 2 years, drops a score for the new Halloween, and dips again.
Right.
Smokes weed, makes music with his son, plays some video games. Yeah.
That is exactly. I was just talking to the guy at the record shop in Pensacola.
At the record store?
At the record store. I picked up a copy of Lost Themes 3, which slaps.
Hell yeah.
And that was exactly what I said. I was like, I'd love for him to make another movie, but I'm also so glad that he's enjoying smoking pot and playing Xbox and jamming out with his kid. Like, that's awesome.
Work first, play later. That's definitely what he did.
We should all be so lucky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, The Thing, 1982.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan, you said you saw this first time in high school?
I think I was like 15. Yeah.
Ooh, okay. Mally, do you remember your first viewing?
I honestly don't remember the first time I saw this movie.
Mm.
Like, it just... I saw it.
It's always been a part of you.
Yeah.
Very suspicious.
It's almost like it's in your DNA.
And almost like it came out of nowhere, almost like outer space.
Mm.
Big if true. Mm. Big if true.
Who goes there?
I can't remember the first time necessarily I saw it the first time either, but I guess because I've seen it so many times.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a part of me now, kind of.
It's
like,
just one of those things.
It's just one of those things. You don't want to wake up. But no, this movie, and I've talked about it a lot, but the prequel are both movies that, like, when I watch one, I have to watch the other.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched the original Howard Hawks one for the first time this year.
Oh,
it's not bad.
No, it's pretty, it's fun.
Very different, but it's got some great stuff in it. But This is a very cool movie because it's like, this is very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just who's the thing at any given moment.
Yeah.
Like, right? It's a game of guess who.
Yeah.
But it has so much to say about a lot of things, like the human condition,
mm-hmm.
toxic masculinity, how we deal in a panic moment. Like, I mean, there's so many movies that are inspired by this and that inspired Carpenter to make this movie. Like, it's kind of like Alien, just in the snow.
Yeah. But also, you know, the thing that we've been dealing with over the last... And let's just get it out of the way. We're going to say the words the thing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But like this thing that we've been dealing with for the last 2 years is
Duh
the
thang.
Feelings of isolation and how that like fucking wears on you.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I mean, I didn't think when we started season 4 last year
mm-hmm.
that we would still be talking about quarantine-ish movies at the end of season 5. But here we are.
No kidding.
So yeah, the thing... It fucking rules. What more can you say about it?
Credits.
All right. So my silver lining is...
So let's, if you're not familiar with this movie, which I'm jealous of you if you haven't been, because you need to stop this episode right now and go watch it.
Yeah, that's the thing. Shit.
That's the thing. No, should I do a counter, like a bell every time?
Ding, ding.
I think we should.
Okay.
So my girlfriend watched this for the first time the other night with me
mm-hmm.
and lost her mind at the effects. Like she was...
And she soaked the floor.
When the, you know, the defibrillator scene happened, it is a joy to watch this with someone who hasn't seen it before, because I found myself watching her because mm-hmm. I'm like, I know that chest is about to open.
Yeah.
I just want to see what she thinks of it.
I have to take a brief moment here to say that my dog just walked in
Uh-oh.
While I'm recording. And you guys, I mean, for those listeners that know,
kill it.
I know I have a husky. So he's just staring at me. Oh my God.
Oh no.
Kill it.
So if I don't make it out of this episode, or if you hear some strange noises,
I love dogs.
Yeah,
but kill it.
Must love dogs.
Mally must love dogs.
Hey, shout out doesthedogdie.com who helped me a lot in the first season of this podcast.
Well, if you're not familiar with the thing, I've got some information here that might catch you up to speed on just exactly what we're talking.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a huge cunt?
Us too.
Wait, can we even say cunt?
Of course. It's empowering these days. Cunt, 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 cunt. I'm Ange Balasone, aka the drag queen, Fat Girl Gina.
And I'm Mike Fales, just a normal gay guy, I guess?
And we're the hosts of The Big Cunty Couch,
a gorgeous new talk show podcast where we invite queers and peers to sit bitch and be fierce on a huge ass couch
while we gab about all things gay.
So come get cozy
and cunty
with us. We're pan for platforms, so find us anywhere online and get listening, sweetie.
Or watching.
Or both.
Otherwise, why the hell am I in full drag?
And we'll see you on The Big Oh, wait, I thought we were going to say that together.
No, on The Big Cunty Couch. Mwah.
So, here's the thing.
Benjamin Grimm goes into space with Reed Richards, Sue Storm, and Johnny Storm.
Nerd!
Different movie, but...
Oh, shit.
The year is 1982 for this movie.
Chris Evans is great in this.
Director is John Carpenter,
mm-hmm.
as we mentioned. This movie stars the one and only Kurt Russell, Wilford Brimley,
Wilford Brimley,
D.K. Carter, Richard Dysart, Richard Mouser, Donald... Moffat, I can never pronounce it last. David Clennon, and just a fucking legend, Keith David.
Give it up.
Let's give it up. I mean, this cast.
This was Keith David's first movie.
I know.
It's insane.
He wasn't listed on Roger Ebert's review, and I added him here at the end because we have to give him credit.
He's incredible.
Incredible.
He's so dialed in. He's so funny. He's so charming. He's so intimidating. And he's like, it takes some doing to be more handsome than Kurt Russell in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
and he gives him a run for his money.
He sure does.
Because most of the other guys in this movie, not for nothing, look like dog shit next to Kurt Russell.
Yep. Which I'm going to go ahead and put his beard up there with some of the top facial hair moments in cinematic history.
It's a great beard.
God, yeah. It's the inspiration for any beard. If you're trying to grow a beard and you can't get to Kurt Russell's level,
mm-hmm. yeah.
don't even bother.
Which I will say, on that list, it's mainly just Kurt Russell characters.
Yes, no kidding.
Yes.
Yeah.
That man is just owning the facial hair game in movies.
I mean, someone finally figured it out and made him Santa Claus.
Yeah.
So
he's made like 5 of those fucking movies.
One of my first notes is, how hot is Kurt Russell in this movie?
Insane. Like, it's absurd.
The beard And those steel blue eyes with that beard, if it's it's something else.
Mm-hmm.
And I might have to, me and Priscilla might be separating because she said she didn't think he was that handsome. And I was like, I can't be associated with you.
Kill her!
She's a thing. Like, she's definitely a thing, like, right? I can't stand watching this devastatingly gorgeous man burn my people.
Yeah.
I will say, I feel, Nathan, I do kind of feel like a little sympathy for you because, I mean, that sucks. Your girlfriend watched it for the first time and just, I mean, that couch is ruined, right? She soaked it through.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she's had to deal with how many times I've watched Big Trouble in Little China. So I think we just...
She's used to it.
Yeah, we just cover the furniture now before we put on a Kurt movie.
You just go full Dexter and make a fucking kill room, cover everything in plastic.
That's right.
I was alone and I soaked my couch, though. I feel you.
Mm.
But also, this is crazy because I told you guys this too in the group chat when I was watching doing the rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
My dog never pays attention to the TV. Doesn't even acknowledges that it's a thing.
Oh, right.
The opening shot of the husky running through the snow, he stopped, sat down, and watched for a few minutes, and I was blown away.
Kill it!
I was like, oh, that's your ancestors running across the snow here. And
that's right.
Which, hey, are we going to talk about how the screenwriter's only credits are this and the Bad News Bears?
Oof, what a legend.
This and 5 Bad News Bears movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, this motherfucker came in, did those, and was like, all right, I'm done. Like,
yeah.
It's incredible.
It's like, what? Huh? No. You can't leave it at that.
I think this movie's a mic drop. If you come out and make this one, you don't have to make it anymore.
He did this in the middle of the Bad News Bears movies.
It's like I've written Hellraiser 1, 2, and all 3 Mighty Ducks films.
I mean, if we're gonna be real, that's George Miller. I made Mad Max, I made Road Warrior, and then I fucked around with some
Happy Feet,
Babe, Happy Feet,
Babe 2. Yeah.
Dude, and then you got fucking Francis Ford Coppola's like fucking Godfather, yeah. Godfather 2, Godfather 3, Jack,
right? Robert Rodriguez.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
yeah,
I love these like Jekyll and Hyde filmmakers. Yeah. Like, I legitimately fuck with that. That's so funny.
Oh, dude, I'm waiting for like Nolan to drop like the next remake of The Grinch.
Yeah.
Lars von Trier's Care Bears.
Oh. I'm there day one. Not even. I don't even care. I don't need to see any marketing.
Quentin Tarantino presents The Teletubbies.
Werner Herzog's My Little Pony.
Oh, you know what? Now that you mentioned it, I gotta take umbrage. I've always had this problem, and I need someone else to acknowledge it. But
okay,
they should be called Teletummies. What the fuck is a tubby? They have televisions in their stomachs.
Yeah,
Teletummies.
This is your hot take for the episode.
Yeah.
Well, so when they were aired in the UK, each episode ended with a lengthy bathing sequence.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe I didn't see that on the home release, so maybe that's what the issue was.
No, it was cut when it aired in the US.
This movie had a budget of $15 million.
On today's episode of The World's Worst Segways.
It only grossed 19.6 at the box office. Currently sits at maybe a little too low, 86% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Way too low.
Absurd. Yeah.
And currently sits at 160 on IMDb's top 250 movies of all time.
Huh.
And the last little bit of note here is, yeah, it was Ennio Morricone's score was nominated for worst musical score because
insane.
Someone at the Razzies must have aneurysms daily and don't know what the fuck they're talking.
That's insane.
I mean, this score is so good, you hear it again in The Hateful Eight.
Yeah, right.
That's how good it was.
So what you're saying is this music has appeared in one good movie.
Disagree. Disagree. Hard disagree.
Ah.
Hateful Eight is just the thing, but as a Western, and I'm here for it.
I like The Hateful Eight.
Thank you.
I dug the Netflix, like the extended cut, too. Mm-hmm. Which I normally am just like, no movie needs an extended cut, but mm-hmm. I kind of dug that one. Morricone, like, specifically wanted to write a Carpenter score, I think is fascinating. And he nails it.
And I think he did it.
Yeah. Carpenter ended up writing a couple of, like, interstitial bits to kind of, like, piece things together. Like, if there was a spot where he felt like Morricone hadn't, like, filled it in. And years later, I think, like, last year, he finally released those on vinyl for the first time. It's like, it's called like The Thing Lost Themes or like Lost Ooh. Segments or something like that. Ooh. It's pretty cool.
Interesting.
Yeah, this score fucking rules.
It slaps.
Dude, there's some stuff in here we're gonna get into, but even just saying how good this movie looks and it's performed, it's still underselling it. Like
his score has that thing, it pops up in X-Files a lot. I don't know how to describe it. It's prickly music.
Mm-hmm.
It's like those like the little, I don't know, there's something about that like so many movies have ripped since then.
Oh, yeah.
And it's so good.
Yeah, it's some pizzicato type stuff going on there. Yeah.
The weirdest thing about watching this movie, though, now, like, especially now, is, like, I'm so used to, like, present day Kurt Russell's voice.
Oh, mm-hmm. Sure.
Which sounds like a rusted wood chipper.
That but so good.
Hearing him, like, talk clearly is so odd now.
It is weird. Yeah.
But yeah, there's some stuff I really want to get into, especially with the lighting and stuff later on. But before we do that, how about we watch this trailer from the 80s? So this should be a treat in and of itself.
Yeah.
So it's going to spoil the entire film.
Maybe. We'll find out. I've honestly not watched it all the way through. So this will be my first time. Here we go.
Yes, I can hear you, Clem Fandango.
Found something in the ice. We need some help down here. Can anybody hear me? We found something.
Oh, that's interesting.
I love how simple the logo is, too.
John Carpenter's the thing.
Man, that's another cool thing, too, when you can just say, my movie. This is my version of the thing. John Carpenter's...
Halloween got him that. Like, yeah. I think Escape from L.A. was the first John Carpenter's...
No, it was Halloween.
Oh, was it?
It was Halloween.
Yeah, it was Halloween. He wrote it into his contract.
Yep.
I love that. God bless him. And it's so great that, like, you know, by the 90s, he's putting out a movie called John Carpenter's Vampires, just to tell the audience, this is what I'll do with them.
The thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation. It'll fight if it has to, but it's vulnerable out in the open. If it takes us over, then it has no more enemies. Nobody left to kill it. And then it's won.
God, I love that they remastered the trailer also.
Yeah.
That's pretty great.
Nathan, doesn't Clark look so much like our friend Galen?
Yes.
Yes, right?
Yes,
that's
he
all
does.
I see. That's all I see when I watch this movie. I'm like, Galen, what are you doing?
I was trying to think of who he reminded me of the whole time.
Yep.
That's insane.
Oof.
Damn.
What a good trailer. I mean,
it's a good trailer.
Gives you nothing.
I mean, it gives you nothing, which is great.
Yeah. I mean, he kind of tells you. He's like, wants to hide in us. It's trying to imitate us. I'm like, ooh, that's just enough of a tease to get me in the seat. Well, so I guess let's start at the beginning, because what a way to open your movie with a dog running in the snow and a helicopter flying in over the horizon and shooting at it.
I mean, yeah. Even before that, we get that great title card reveal.
Yeah.
And a flying saucer.
Yeah.
I love that it's a flying saucer.
Yeah. I mean, it's old school.
Yeah.
I think it's well known that John Carpenter was a huge, huge Howard Hawks guy. I mean,
yes.
He remade a couple of his movies. But yeah, just old school. Just a flying saucer. But I love that he takes it a step further. He's like, it's not going to be a guy in a suit. We're going to do these insane practical effects.
Yeah.
Created by like an 18-year-old.
Yeah, Rob Bottin was like a kid making this.
Yes.
It's insane.
And literally like had a psychotic break making this stuff because he was so like, I want this to be perfect.
Yeah.
Like, I want this to be the grossest thing, like, but also look real.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to do a guy in a suit. I don't want to do stop motion. And it looks, even to this day, it looks incredible.
Yeah.
When Palmer is in that chair and his eyes start to like boil out of their sockets.
Oh my God.
So fucking good.
Holy shit, does it look good.
And Rob Bottin was like, I love that effect so much that I just redid it for Total Recall, just with a little bit like even crazier. I mean, Verhoeven saw this movie and was like, well, that's my guy.
Oh my, yeah. Verhoeven and him work well. They go together like peanut butter and jelly for sure.
Absolutely.
But yeah, we got to get this out of the way too, because I said there was a lot of stuff I want to talk about with the lighting and all that, but the DP of this movie, Dean Cundey. I think he gets somehow lost amongst all of the, like, you know, everybody knows about Roger Deakins and people like that, Robert Richardson. Dean Cundey, if you're not familiar with that name,
I think he's the GOAT.
Yeah.
He has shot some of your favorite fucking movies.
I have a list here. I just handpicked a couple.
Yeah.
But listen to this list.
Mm-hmm.
He shoots most of John Carpenter's movies up front.
Mm-hmm.
Halloween, The Fog, Escape from New York, Halloween 2, this movie. He makes Psycho 2. He does all of the Back to the Futures.
Yep. Yeah.
He does Big Trouble in Little China, Hook, Death Becomes Her. He does fucking Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Apollo 13, Casper, Looney Tunes Back in Action, and of course, the GOAT, Flubber.
Of course.
Wait, didn't he also do Home Alone?
Oh, I just listed a few. I don't know if he did Home Alone. I can look that up.
I think he may have.
I feel like he did Home Alone.
I'm going to look it up.
He definitely shot Jack and Jill.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he sure did. Yes, of course.
No, I just pulled a handful.
No, he's a DP on Book of Boba Fett, by the way.
Oh, yeah, fuck yeah.
Which like has me so even more excited for that show.
This might be my favorite of his. I mean, Jurassic Park is really tough to beat, but this movie just looks so fucking good.
Yeah.
When they go, this was my big moment of like realization, but mm-hmm. when they go to the Norwegian camp,
yeah.
and it's just Mac and Copper walking through,
oh yeah. my God.
Every single frame, like every part of the frame is so well lit. There's so much texture. There's such beautiful lighting on everything. Mm-hmm. And nothing is out of focus. Nothing is overlit or underlit. It's, God damn it.
It's all print worthy. I mean, legitimately, you could frame every shot of this movie.
Every frame of painting, absolutely. All right, I'm on Dean Cundey's site. I do not see Home Alone. He did Home Again, that Reese Witherspoon movie.
Motherfucker, you haven't scrolled down far enough. You're in 2010.
You see the Command F search I just did, dumb fuck? There's no other Home movie on his.
I wasn't looking.
Yeah, you were thinking of Home Again.
I wasn't. I absolutely was not.
You think about that movie every day. You text us, I'm just thinking about Home Again.
I gotta stop blacking out during the day.
I also love that, he also did Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Forgot Woo! To mention that one.
Of course. So many Zemeckis movies.
I love that his bio on IMDb, the first line is, Dean Cundey reigns supreme. I'm like, yeah. It sure as fuck does.
Roger Rabbit, I think, might be his finest work because the amount of legwork needed to properly light a film that includes characters that aren't there. Like, yep. that was new. I mean, it really was. There was this insane. I remember on the VHS box for Halloween back in the day. It had like a little bit of a blurb at the bottom about people who were involved in it. Like Nick Castle would go on to shoot The Last Starfighter.
Oh mm-hmm. my God. He shot nothing but trouble.
Yes, he did.
Oh, yes, shit. He did. He also did The Flintstones, by the way, too.
And Roadhouse.
Oh my God. Well, there you go. That's his best work.
What a legend.
But at the end, it said Dean Cundey would later go on to shoot bigger monsters with Jurassic Park. And I just always thought that was such a weird tie into Halloween.
And Romancing the Stone.
He did Romancing the Stone. He did Halloween 3. This dude, fucking legend.
Yeah.
God damn.
He's serving Cundey. I mean, he's the best.
Yeah. Yeah, he can get his Cundey eating. But this
he's a lean Dean Cundey machine.
40 years later, this movie still looks crisp and clear and like. This movie has no fad on it, mm-hmm. which is what I love.
Except
I mean,
for Wilford Brimley's actual.
No. Apparently, John Carpenter shot a lot more footage.
Oh, yeah. There's like a whole other transformation for Blair that's mm-hmm. not in the movie. There's a whole bunch of stuff with them in the camp. And it's so wild what the studio thought was fat on this movie, because there was a TV edit that cuts out like the first 30 minutes of the film.
God.
Like all of the establishing shots are replaced with a voiceover telling us a couple of sentences about each character.
Yep.
So that whole sequence with the chess computer is gone. And it's just like, here's RJ McCready. He's a man of action. He's very tired.
Yeah.
All stuff that we get from their performances.
Yeah. And he cut out a lot of the interpersonal stuff too, between the guys. Cause he wanted it to feel more like panicky and
right.
You know, I mean, as much as I would like to see those scenes of like Keith David and Kurt Russell together, I mean, Keith David is the closest you really get to an antagonist in this movie besides The Thing.
Yeah. Right.
I love that he is constantly on his heels and like, nope, not falling for this shit.
No.
Like, it's so good.
Childs is like the first person who is just like, I have to survive this.
Yep. Yep.
And I don't know. It's weird. Like, it's pretty incredible to me how quickly they, I mean, like we mentioned in the Vivarium episode, the path to suicide.
Mm-hmm.
It's very wild how quickly everyone kind of agrees. We all have to die for everything to be okay.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that. I wrote that note down. I was like, Blair and McCready in this movie is exactly how I would be in Vivarium.
Yeah.
Like when Blair does the computer simulation and realizes it would take like 3 years to assimilate everybody mm-hmm. and he just starts breaking the computers. Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
3.08219 mm-hmm. years. Your boy did the math.
Oh, I did too. When I saw how many days or whatever it took.
Just pause and calculator.
This is also baffling. This is episode 130.
Mm.
How is this our first Carpenter movie?
Huh.
Is it?
I looked back, and unless I'm forgetting, so, and I don't count Halloween 3.
No.
Because he didn't direct that. So I'm like, how?
It's Tommy Lee Wallace.
Yeah. I was like, how have we never done in any Carpenter movie because they all seem
pretty wild.
It is insane, actually.
Yeah. I mean, any of his apocalypse his loose apocalypse trilogy would count for this one. I mean, there's so many great options for this show for sure. I will be thinking about that next season.
Yeah.
Actually, you know what? Going back to who we are, DC, I think you're Clark, man.
Yeah.
Because
I do love Huskies.
He sounds so sad when they ask him to kennel the dog.
Oh, and my gosh.
After I noticed that, I was like, man, Clark just generally sounds sad all the time.
He's a sad boy.
He loves the dogs.
And plus, y'all look alike.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I'll take that. I'll take Clark. Clark's a good looking guy.
Well,
speaking of which, with this dog, this opening scene, I love how we have no idea what's going on, but we're instantly supposed to hate this guy because he's shooting at a dog.
Right.
Like, literally the opposite of the save the cat. It's shoot the dog.
Shoot the dog.
I mean, that's a great way to play up this idea of, like, you don't know what you're in for. Because when that dog starts to do its thing.
Oh, you're right.
When the dog starts to thing.
When the dog starts to vibrate.
Man, that shot of the dogs, like, going into the kennel and sitting down calmly is terrifying. Yeah. I don't know why.
Dog acting in this movie
is great.
It's phenomenal.
He's the best actor of the movie.
Yeah.
Hands down for me is this dog.
These dogs crush it.
When Copper and McCready come back from the Norwegian camp and the dog is just watching them land, and he's just kind of like, damn it.
Right.
I get that from the dog's expression. He's doing nothing. He's just looking out the window.
Sons of bitches.
It's so good.
I also love we use the dog to we get all these establishing shots very much like Haddonfield, you know, in the first Halloween. Like, we really get to know this space by following around the dog, following around what's his name on the rollerblades.
Oh, Knowles. Yeah.
Yes.
I love Knowles.
He's great.
When Bennings asks him to turn on the radio and he's like, okay, and he kind of does like the fake flip of the volume knob.
Right, which is just for him because no one's watching him do
it. Yes, I know.
So good.
I know.
That's so good.
I love it.
Yeah.
But no, like, that's a good point though about showing the establishing shots kind of like at the end of Halloween of all the different places we're going to see, kind of doing it in the reverse order here. But when the dog just peeks his head out behind the door and just walks down the hallway, I'm like, I know this dog is going to be important, but I don't know how yet. And then, of course, when he goes into the room
and it fades to black,
dude, there's so many fades to blacks in this movie. I forgot all about it.
Yeah,
it's almost like a soap opera.
Yeah.
Well, and this is the only movie where I'm okay with it because I fucking hate fades to black.
I do too.
No, I agree. Yeah,
well, this one in Prisoners does it a couple times, and I forgot about that, but I really liked it in that too. But the genius of this movie is it's almost impossible to track who is the thing at any given time,
right,
and how did they when did they become the thing? Because the brilliance of this scene here is you're supposed to see this is the first person the dog infects, right?
Right.
And the brilliance of it is Carpenter didn't use any of the actors for the silhouette of the guy on the wall.
I was wondering about that.
Yes, because there's no way to tell of who it would be. So it's brilliant. I would love to see, I'm sure someone's done it, like a cork board with yarn of like, here's who the thing infects first, here's how long.
Oh, yeah, people definitely have. Yeah,
I would love to see that, because that actually would be interesting. But
some people have, like, tried to come up with their own rules to kind of figure it out, too.
What?
Like, some people have pointed to someone sharing a cigarette as being a transmission moment, and, like, trying to kind of figure out, like, oh, well, this is how it jumped here to here. And Carpenter, like, kind of plays fast and loose with it.
Yes, I mean, he does. He's so fucking cheeky with this shit.
This motherfucker has not directly answered any question.
It's so great.
Well, he has, and then changes his answer later.
Right. Yes. He did say that the video game was canon.
Yes,
and
he did.
Like, 10 years after that, he was, like, on Twitter and just decided to, like, say, like, completely throw a wrench into what the ending is of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So funny to me.
We're going to have to talk about that because there's legitimately no way to possibly know.
Right.
It's impossible to know what the ending of this movie actually spells out because there's so many different variables with everything. So we'll get there when we get there.
Right.
Which I know I'm going to talk about a lot, and I'm talking about a lot this season, but I really think that prequel from 2011 really is a solid follow-up to this and really puts this movie in a new light because they kind of established their own rules too.
Yeah.
But legitimately good ones.
And some that pull from the source material too, like
from the novel. Speaking of, like, introductions, this scene with Kurt Russell playing against the computer,
so good.
It's so good because, like, I don't see McCready as being a chess guy.
No, this is his last resort. He's so fucking bored.
Well, there's a pinball machine and like a foosball table they show later on. I'm like, dude,
he's conquered it.
You're definitely a pinball. Yeah, that's a good point. His high score is all over that pinball machine.
I would much rather play chess than either of those things.
The pinball?
Yeah.
He's played the pinball so much. He's watched all of the taped game shows that they have. And
that's
now
true.
He's just like, this is my last thing. I guess I'm going to neg the chess computer.
I'm sorry, Nathan, his last what?
His last thing.
Well, I feel like chess is only fun when you're playing against someone else. Playing against the computer, I've never been entertained by.
Interesting.
But also, McCready just doesn't seem... Maybe that's why he loses, because he does not seem like a good chess guy. And
right.
There's no way to know how good he is, because this chess game is all fucked. I don't know if you guys even looked at the board, but like...
Oh, yeah, I don't know what that configuration is.
Yeah, it's awful. There's no game actually happening
here. Yeah.
But then I love that this is how we get introduced to what this character is, because what does he do upon losing? He changes the rules by just pouring his fucking drink into this computer.
It calls it a bitch.
Yes. Like,
cheating bitch.
Dude, what if somebody else wanted to play chess?
Right.
Like, nah, fuck him. Kill it.
That's Kurt Russell's whole demeanor in this movie is, I'm in charge until I'm not, and that's when I just lash out.
I love it.
Right?
Yeah, and it is that toxic masculinity you were talking about.
Yes.
He is, even when the world is on the line and his life is on the line, he refuses to answer questions. He just gets angrier. He's like, all right, well, I've got the fucking flamethrower, so just listen to me.
Yep.
There's almost no communication going on.
How fucking cool are flamethrowers, guys?
Dude. Guys, I want one so bad.
So bad. Let me be clear. I would probably kill myself the day I got it.
Oh, sure. Immediately.
But man, would I have fun for those 10 seconds that I got to use it. Because God damn it. There's no cooler weapon.
No.
Like, what are you going to put up against a flamethrower?
I'm gonna jump the gun a little bit, but silver lining to you blowing yourself up with a flamethrower?
Yeah.
My Sunday night's just freed up.
I have a question, actually, one that defies science, but how was Wilford Brimley this old even back then?
You want to know something that really fucks with me?
He's 27.
He made Cocoon 3 years after this.
I know.
What?
I know.
And he's, I think, 50 in this movie, or like in his like late 40s in this movie.
Oof.
Born 1934.
Yeah, he would have been about 48.
Yes.
Son of a bitch.
Insane.
Which I feel like the scene of his character destroying shit, that was just Wilford between takes.
Oh, yeah.
And the camera was just rolling.
He was. Wasn't an actor, really.
No,
that's the whole reason that Carpenter picked him to be like who the final version of the thing was going to be, because no one really knew who he was and didn't care when he went off screen.
I need y'all to look at his picture on Wikipedia.
Oh no!
He looks like he's going to be in The Hateful 88.
All right, I'm pulling it up.
It's
Dustin, you're the only person I know who types in wikipedia.com and then searches.
I know.
Most people just Google.
Normally I type up here
the name, because the Wikipedia thing is the first fucking thing that ever comes up.
I know. I just go straight to Wikipedia. I don't bother.
You're such a weirdo.
Ooh,
holy shit, he looks like my father.
Man, wasn't he like legitimately a cowboy?
Oh.
Yeah, he dropped out of high school to become a cowboy.
And become an extra for Western films.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, he worked as a cowboy in Idaho. What does that entail?
I don't know.
He was a bodyguard for Howard Hughes.
Oh, holy shit. This just reminds me. This blew my mind. I did not know this, but I was just up in Savannah, Georgia, visiting my mom over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And she was telling me stories about her husband that I didn't know. Apparently, this motherfucker worked with John Wayne, and I'm just now hearing about
it. Wilford Brimley did?
No.
Oh.
My grandfather.
Oh, no shit.
He worked on, I'm trying to find the movie here, she mentioned it, but goddamn, of course John Wayne's got a fuckload of movies. It was something where there was a helicopter stunt and my dad was helping operate the crane for the helicopter.
Mm.
And I was like, what the fuck, for real?
That's awesome.
Red River, that's what it was.
You know, my dad used to try out the stunts for Evel Knievel and then let him swoop in and take all the glory.
Oh yeah. Yeah, rest in peace to your dad, by the way.
Jesus Christ.
You know what my favorite part of that movie is the photograph that he has of his dad with Evel Knievel, and he's got to circle his dad's face and then put the word dad with an arrow to it.
I miss you, dad.
It's such a good movie. God damn it. What do you think's more on the nose, though, in terms of needle drops? Because there's very superstitious with this movie.
Yeah.
Or what they do, I love that they kind of play it up in the prequel, too. They do the Who Can It Be Now?
Oh, yeah. No, they're both extremely on the nose, and I enjoyed them.
It's so good. Yeah, it's cheeky as fuck.
It's very cheeky in a way that Carpenter isn't usually.
Yeah.
Like, he loves that kind of, like, you know, hint, you know, wink, wink at the audience, but it doesn't usually come in the form of needle drops, and I really enjoyed that.
Well, I feel like Carpenter is one of those guys that, like, someone's like, hey, hey, John, what if we put Superstitious as a song here? And he kind of laughs. He's like, no, but seriously, what are we going to do? He's like, that's a good joke, but we can't really do that.
I don't know. We'll find out. How much is it? I mean, how much could a song cost? $5?
Oh, yeah. But yeah, there's so much cool shit in this movie, man. Yeah. Like, Null's being just on rollerblades all the time shouldn't be as cool as it is.
Yeah. Oh, no. Those are not rollerblades, sir. Those are roller skates.
You are correct. You are correct.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I like that that's his introduction. It's almost like a femme fatale. Like, they always show the feet and, like, pan up.
Oh, right.
But he just kind of rolls in, and he's like, I don't know. I don't remember what he says, but he's like, who put their dirty drawers in my fucking trash can?
Right. Yeah.
That's so good. But yeah, there's so much good. And I love that they almost do kind of like the Ripley thing in Alien of like, you don't know who's going to be the one to kind of take over here.
Right.
When shit hits the fan.
And arguably none of them really do. MacReady kind of gets people to listen to him because he has the flamethrower.
Yeah.
Which is also a very Ripley move. But
yes.
No, I don't know who would be the best leader out of this group. I'm tempted to say like Copper, but I don't know.
Yeah.
The thing's
in charge, guys. Speaking of the music, like when the music drops out and we still have that constant soundtrack of like the groan of the wind, which really sets in when they're going through the Norwegian base.
Yeah.
Like it is haunting.
And also, even if we never had this prequel that they did, like there is such a story that it can be told.
The frozen blood coming from the guy who cut his throat.
Cut his throat and his wrist.
Yeah. He made sure.
Yeah. Was not fucking around.
Yeah. He's like, I'm gonna fucking make sure I'm dead.
Mm-hmm. Even the creature that they do the autopsy on, that they find the base, like,
holy fuck.
You can tell it died afraid.
The two faces merge together.
Yes.
And just, it's still steaming when they get there. Mm-hmm. Like, the fire axe in the door, like, there's so much cool shit in this scene alone that I'm like, this is an entire, I mean, obviously they did it, but there's so many little bits and pieces here that I'm like, I want to know this story. And if you're able to do that in a story I'm already invested in, I feel like that's top tier fucking screenwriting.
For sure.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And we've done some sweaty movies this season. Mm-hmm. Is this the goopiest movie of the season?
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's a bold call.
That is.
I mean, I would say Under the Cherry Moon's the goopiest.
It's pretty goopy. That's true.
Oh, no. I mean, Life also, too. I feel like Calvin.
Oh, Life is. Yeah, Calvin's a goopy boy.
Yeah.
Calvin alone was pretty goopy. He's a goopy boy.
That is a movie that I keep forgetting I watched this year.
Yeah, that happened.
I know. It's been a long season, I gotta say.
Boy, howdy.
The cum stain from outer space.
So Blair does this. Blair and Copper do these autopsies on this thing, and I love me an old school pre-2000s. I'm the doctor, and let me explain what's going on. Scene.
Yeah, same.
Him walking around with his little pencil with a eraser on it, just spouting off things. I'm so glad there's not one of these in here, but I also love a speak English, doc.
Oh, I know. Yeah,
MacReady seems like he would definitely be one of the ones that just shouts at Wilford Brimley like in English, please.
Well, Jack Burton would for sure.
Yeah, oh yeah.
All I know is this thing came out of me in a goddamn alley.
I just love Wilford Brimley in this movie. How he's just like just huffing and puffing, but like also kind of like tapping the pencil on his chin like
This is the worst case of diabetes I've ever seen.
When they kill that dog and they bring it into him, he gives them a look like, I don't want to open another one of these. Yeah. Like he looks so tired. He's so tired.
Oh, the amount of times he's just like as he's opening the opening up the body. It's so good.
Don't squirt at me.
I feel like Wilford Brimley could just talk the thing down. Yeah. Like, you're not going to assimilate me, goddammit.
It's so good.
That's what they didn't try. They didn't just try just talking it down. How you could talk a bear down, like, if you're just aggressive.
Like it's always who is the thing, never how is the thing.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. And it also is, where is the thing? Who is the thing? What is the thing? It's all the W's.
You know, the reporter's questions, my dear boy.
Yeah, it's the five W's for sure. Speaking of rules, this type of movie would be like, it'd almost be like an Alien or a Jaws where you don't get to see everything because they want to keep it in a mystery, like how these people die. The thing killed, like, there's no two deaths that are similar.
Right.
You get Bennings that is halfway through assimilation when he gets killed.
Mm-hmm.
You get, is it Norris, the guy who becomes the spider head?
Mm-hmm. Fuck, that whole sequence is...
Dude, the Norris head, that's such a classic fucking image.
Yes.
When it's pulling itself off, it is like Reanimator style, like insanity.
And the groan... Speaking of that, too, the Bennings howl here in the snow is, oh my God.
That's the scariest shot of the movie for me, is when he turns and his hand is just kind of started to change.
Yeah. He's got a crab hand. He looks like, fuck, what's his name from Frisky Dingo?
Barnaby.
Yeah.
I think the most terrifying shot for me is still the Palmer one. It's either that or the dog splitting in half open. God damn it. It's such a good effect.
Yeah.
Maybe my favorite line in cinema history is Palmer's, "You gotta be fucking kidding."
Uh-huh. That's great.
That line's so good.
Yeah.
I mean, even with Blair, Gary might have the worst death. Mm. Blair putting his fingers under Gary's skin and through his face.
And then drags him that way.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Wild.
Yeah. I mean, there's also some great stuff here with playing with the audience fast and loose, because there's so many shots of people that are just running through the snow and you have no idea who it is.
Oh, it's confusing. Yeah. Like they're not continuity errors, but it's purposeful, like, misdirects and change. I mean, when Knowles comes back in and he's like, "I had to cut him loose because he was acting weird," you know, that like all of that, like, it's, you don't know what to believe.
Yeah.
You're right there with everybody else,
and they do a jump scare, like, which is not very Carpenter-y.
No,
like, but there's a straight up jump scare
when the blood jumps.
When the lights go out.
Yeah, that's great.
And what's his name goes outside. Also, Blair kind of figures out what's going on. He runs a simulation, which I love this antiquated lo-fi.
Oh, it's great.
Science, like, animation here.
Also very Escape from New York.
Yep.
"He blinded me with science."
Yep. When he realizes what's at stake here and he just starts going fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
MacReady and I think it's, who is it, Knowles, trying to subdue him after he puts a fire axe to the table. Fucking MacReady just throwing a haymaker.
Yep. So good. The fucking punch sound effect.
Oh my God. It's so good. Just hitting a wet piece of meat or something.
So funny.
So good.
I gotta say, from that simulation, like, I did, there was one phrase that I thought was pretty fantastic. Cell dog imitation would be such a good band name.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. That'd be a great, or a good album title for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's gonna be the name of the noise band the three of us inevitably start.
Oh my God.
Please.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
The JD3 presents Cell Dog
Imitation.
And the final track's got to be Hours to Assimilation or something like that. 27,000.
Right.
The ending track of the album is going to be just a 12-minute loop of the thing screaming.
It's a hidden track, too.
Yeah.
Good.
You think the album's over?
Backmask it.
Yeah. I've never noticed Copper has a nose ring until this watch.
Same. Until watching it in HD. Yes. It's crazy.
Yeah, I was like, that is not what I expect a doctor to have.
But also, judging from the prequel, that means he's not infected at any point.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the cool thing about this prequel that I don't think people give enough credit to. The way they had to write that movie with retconning everything from this movie.
Yeah.
Because it's going to come at the end too, but Keith David has an earring.
Yep. Without outright contradicting it at any point. It's pretty...
Really impressive.
It's pretty impressive. It is.
I'm telling you, listener, if you didn't get that movie...
People are sleeping on it.
Yes, it's so good. Speaking of Blair going out of control, there's something else going out of control. Gary's eyebrows. He is, oh my God. Those things are loose. Those things are wild.
He showed up to set and he saw Kurt Russell's beard. He's like, fuck, I gotta do something to compete with that.
I gotta do something to stand out.
He looks like Professor X in the comics. Like, it's intense.
He's like Arlie Ermy. Like, it's,
oh, yeah.
He's untamed. Just unfucking tamed. Then we get this speech in the snow where they're burning the bodies, because they found out that even when you think the bodies are dead, that the cells are still alive, and that's how Bennings gets infected.
Right.
So they bury them in the snow and burn them. And the speech that MacReady gives, no score.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that it's just a panning shot across the guys. And he's like, I know I'm human, and I know some of you are still human. Otherwise, you just all attack me right now.
Right.
It's so fucking good.
Yeah.
Like, the paranoia sets in immediately.
Yeah.
Like, it's fantastic. There's, like I said, there's no fat on this movie. It's so trim.
The next time they check on Blair, he's already got a fucking noose.
Yep. Dude,
in his cabin.
The noose is such a great little moment, because neither of them acknowledge it.
No.
And it's dead center in the frame of the shot.
And it makes you wonder, does that mean that he talked himself out of it? Does that mean that he became infected after he had already made the decision? Like, when is the timeline here?
My headcanon is that that he gets locked up in the shack,
right?
And then he decides they're not going to be able to fucking deal with this thing. I'm not going to get assimilated. I'm going to take myself out.
Yeah.
And then got infected. I think definitely that's what it was.
Yeah.
That's why he doesn't make mention of it.
Right. In the short story, they never even tried to like check on him, and he was sneaking out every night because he was contorting himself into like a puddle to go under the doors.
Ooh, some Terminator 2 shit there.
Yeah.
What's the time frame of this movie?
I think it's less than a day.
Yeah, I think it's very quick.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that has me question one thing towards the end.
Ooh, okay.
Blair built a whole flying saucer in like a fucking day.
I know.
He's smart.
I love it.
Like, this motherfucker is productive.
He is.
Well, not to mention he damages the helicopters and everything.
Yeah.
Like, he's out there.
Well, I assume that worked twofold because he was stealing parts from them to build his flying saucer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, split diopter shot in this movie.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah,
with the scalpel.
A good one, too. I usually dislike split diopter shots.
I do, too.
But I really like that one.
Yeah. I feel like when it's something like this that, like, really justifies its existence and really draws your eye in an interesting way, because this whole thing is, it's not even telling you who has the scalpel until it's in MacReady's face. Yep. Like, I think that's pretty fantastic.
Although, it is pretty obvious who's holding it. If
you're paying attention to their clothing.
Yeah.
Or just where they're standing.
Yeah. I don't look at people. I look at their clothes.
I'm
very superficial. I'm kind of like Gretchen Wieners that way.
Can we talk about the blood test scene?
That was my next note, man.
Because goddamn.
One of the best scenes of all time.
Masterclass in suspense.
Mm-hmm. Not only that, but also doing what you can with what you have.
Yeah.
Like, he needs to heat the wire up. So what does he do? Oh, I've got this flamethrower.
Yeah.
It's, from a writing standpoint, it's so efficient.
Yeah.
Like, in that way.
One of my very few qualms with this movie is, like, we have this shot of fucking windows, like, burning.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just, like, fucking harshly cuts back to them just calmly testing blood.
Yep.
Oh, sure.
I was like, that's my one qualm. I'm like, that was a weird edit.
They do some comedy with that, though. Because every time someone gets approved that they're not the thing, they just join MacReady and they also have a flamethrower.
Yep. There's a jump cut to them like standing next to him. I loved that. Yeah.
Well, because everyone's so antagonistic until they're proven not to be the thing.
Yeah.
And then they're on the other side with their eyebrows furled.
Right.
It's great. Like Keith David, when he gets cleared and he's just got his flamethrower ready, it's great. Everybody's attitude flops immediately.
Yep.
There's also MacReady being a murderer because he shoots Clark.
Sure.
I mean, it's in self-defense, but I love that Keith David brings that up. He doesn't let it slide.
He calls him on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell never acknowledges it.
No, he refuses. He's like, look, because at this point, he knows none of them are leaving there alive anyway.
Yep.
So it's either he takes him out when he attacks him, or we all take turns shooting each other anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Palmer's blood escaping makes me jump every single time I watch the movie.
Oh, yeah.
There's a couple of things like that in movies that I'm...
Couple of what?
Yeah. God damn it. There's a couple of moments like that in other movies that I've seen tons of times that even though I know it's coming, it still makes me jump.
Yeah.
A big one for me is Peter Serafinowicz in Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
When he's in the shower and he punches his fist.
Oh, sure.
And for some reason, I know it's coming and it still makes me jump every time.
For me, it's when Sinbad pushes that guy dressed like a box
all
the way. I mean, I always get so worried for him.
Yeah. No, the blood test is genius. I love the little squeaky sound of the wire on the Petri dish.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's so good.
Every little bit of this movie is designed to make you uneasy, up to and including that sound effect.
Yeah.
Like, it is so, it's so grating, but it's great.
And this is how I would know I would be assimilated so quickly. I would never think to do this. Like, I just wouldn't think to do a blood test.
Oh, sure.
And also, this is a trope in movies that we got to put a stop to.
Mm.
Anytime you need to draw blood, you don't have to slice your palm,
right,
guys? You can do your arm or something.
Right.
It gets me every time. I'm like, no, thank you. I don't want to see your thumb.
Oh, now your hand is useless for the fight ahead.
Yes.
These motherfuckers go straight for their thumbs.
Yes. I'm like, dude, you know you've got like a thigh or you've got like a bicep. Oh. Like, you don't have to.
Have we talked about this? I can't do needle stuff.
Oh.
Like, I even just watching someone get a shot, I can't handle it.
I feel you.
And especially when I'm like, oh, they're not trained to do this.
You should not watch the Evil Dead remake. You should definitely not do that.
Oh, you should absolutely watch the Evil Dead remake.
Yeah, actually, a second thought, yeah, you should. That movie fucking rules.
I will if you guys watch it with me.
Oh, get the blanket.
Oh, no, don't worry, Nathan. There's no needles in it.
Oh, okay, fantastic.
Man, the reveal here when Palmer is ousted and the thing's like, God damn it.
Yeah.
And just tossing windows around like a fucking rag doll.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good.
It's wild.
I like, too, that this was also a running thing with the prequel, but flamethrowers just not working in the moment you need them.
Yep. Oh, sure.
Seems genuine. Mm-hmm. It seems genuine.
Which I will say, missed opportunity on, like, Universal for not making that, like, a theme park ride.
Oh my God.
Like, the thing. The ride where, like, you just strap your head in and get tossed around.
The stunt spectacular.
Yeah. Oh, man, a stunt spectacular with the thing.
It gets real cold in there.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Also, I want to put a stop to this, too. I've seen a lot of other podcasts and a lot of other people talking about this movie being like, why would they even have flamethrowers? And I'm like, guys, they're in the snow.
Yeah.
You can melt snow with fire. That's probably why they have them.
Probably.
The guns, I can't really explain. I don't know why they have a bunch of guns there, but...
Because it was the 80s.
That's true. You gotta have a gun in every drawer.
Duh. It's a bunch of Americans.
That's true.
Holed up in the 80s.
If there's not a gun within like hand reach distance, it just doesn't work.
The weird part is that it's not that they had flamethrowers, is that it was a bunch of Americans locked together in the 80s and no one did coke.
Mm-hmm.
And also, again, it is the Howard Hawks of it all. I mean, Carpenter always wanted to make a Western. So every single time he made a movie, he was just like, yeah, everybody's got fucking guns at the ready.
Yep.
They're all wearing cool hats.
I didn't put this together before either, but on this rewatch, I noticed it. Did you guys notice the name of the game that is next to MacReady while he's trying to get this flamethrower lit and he just can't do it?
No.
The Thing.
Yeah, it's called The Thing. Oh. No, it's called Heat Wave, which I thought was real cheeky.
I like that.
Yeah, and everyone getting their old flamethrower. Man, that's what a hell of a, like, sign-up bonus. Hey, you've proven you're not the thing. Here's a flamethrower.
It's your upgrade.
Where's Michael Moore's movie on that? Huh? Let me have that one. You can get a gun when you open a checking account in Wisconsin whenever. How about when you prove you're not the thing, you get a flamethrower?
Michael Moore's Burning Antarctica.
that's an agenda I could get behind, by the way. I could get behind giving people flamethrowers for proving they're not the thing.
Sure.
Or how about this? Make it more relatable.
Get your vaccinated.
Get a flamethrower. There you go.
Oh, my God.
I love it.
Absolutely.
There's also, at this point in the movie,
yeah,
where they've already proven X amount of people are not the thing.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, and honestly earlier, no one should ever be left alone.
No.
From this point moving forward, ever.
No splitting up anymore.
Not even a buddy system, because you can still get assimilated then. You've got to have three people minimum if you go somewhere. But even then, everybody just needs to go in a group. You get in one of those like a conga line, and we all just go from one room to another.
We're shitting our pants. Mm-hmm. We are not going to sleep.
Mm-hmm. If I have to go to the bathroom, you're all coming in and you're standing around.
Fuck that. I don't want to get murdered by the thing while I'm on the toilet.
What if that's the end of the movie, is MacReady goes to take a shit and there's still Nulls and all of them.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, we gotta go to the bathroom, so you guys gotta come with me. And as he's taking a shit, they all turn out to be the thing.
They all transform.
Oh, and then Blair comes out of the toilet.
Ooh, I like this idea.
I hate this idea.
There's also something I never noticed before, too. There's straight up lens flares in this movie, which I know seems like a nothing thing, but it was done so well that, like, it wasn't distracting, but still, like, made things look incredibly well lit.
Especially in those, like, those cavern sequences at the end.
Yes.
Yeah.
The visual of Blair. I mean, we're kind of already towards the end of the movie, honestly. But the reveal that Blair was already assimilated at some point when they go back, when they decide to go back and get him.
Yeah.
Now they're all proven that they're not the thing except for Blair.
Right.
And they go down. They leave Childs behind. Big mistake, first of all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, based on what you know. But yeah, Blair is secretly... the thing, and has been assimilating, a spaceship underneath the shack that he's in. And yeah, this little Jetson-sized spaceship.
It's so funny.
It's so cute.
The visual got me laughing so hard to myself.
It's so cute.
No, it's incredible. They decide they're going to blow up the entire facility because no one's getting out of there alive. And at this point, everything is so fucked up that they're not even going to last until a rescue team gets there.
Yeah.
So they're literally a suicide squad. By the way, I don't know if you guys noticed.
Oh my God. Yeah.
There was a bit, my girlfriend actually said, so what are we, some type of the thing? I can't believe you said that. That's so funny.
We should have had her on the podcast just to get her, as someone who's never seen it, get first viewing thoughts out.
Right. In a movie with zero female presence as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, she was going to do the episode, but the couch dried and she stuck to it.
Oh no.
God damn. This is, I said this the other day too. I would love to see this same, like, this version.
But with the cast from Mean Girls?
Well, I was just going to say an all-female cast, but now that you've tweaked the deal a little bit, I'm in favor of that.
Fuck, that would be great. Are you kidding me?
Stop trying to make the thing happen. It's not going to happen.
But no, I would love to see, because I feel like this is the whole reason shit goes tits up is because it is just a bunch of dudes fighting over who's going to be in charge. Like,
yeah.
What would a female version of the thing look like? Like, what would that movie look like? And I want to see that movie now.
Yeah, I'm into that.
That'd be cool.
It would probably be 5 minutes long because they'd figure it out immediately.
Like, it's definitely Jessica. And then the next shot is just them burning her with a flamethrower.
The thing, answer the call.
God damn it.
But that's actually a female reboot or whatever, a gender swap, whatever, that I can get behind. Because that actually sounds like it would actually play into what the movie could be versus what it has to be.
I'm into that.
But yeah, they decide they're going to blow up this whole facility. And so they go under Blair's shack. And at some point, Blair gets caught up with Gary and assimilates him. Mm-hmm. We don't see Knowles. We don't know what happens to Knowles.
Knowles just dips the fuck out.
Right.
We don't know.
That's the genius of this movie. So many, there's no two deaths that are equal.
Mm-hmm.
There's people that die off screen, people that get assimilated, you don't even know when they get assimilated.
Right.
Every time the thing reappears, it's something different. Like Blair as this like fucking dune worm in here when MacReady's trying to blow up the facility.
Yeah, this fucking like chimera. Oof. It's like it's also part dog.
Yeah.
Like the face is destroyed. Like there's other little faces like peeking out. It's such a wild effect.
Yeah. And maybe one of the best line readings of all time with Kurt Russell here.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, fuck you too.
Yeah, so good.
So good. So he the place goes tits up. Like it's an explosion just out of like it's incredible. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get to the actual ending of the movie, which is MacReady now surrounded in ruins. It's basically the Norwegian camp all over again.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally is because they used the same set.
Yes,
oh,
they
right.
did.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of my favorite running gags is MacReady not being able to call them Norwegian and keeps calling them Swedish.
Yeah, that is pretty great.
Pretty fucking funny. But he decides, you know what? Fuck it. I've had a hell of a day. Sits down next to a bonfire and realizes he's probably going to freeze to death.
Yeah.
Because no rescue team is going to be able to get there in time to help him out.
Oh, yeah. There's one thing from the source material that I wish had been in the movie.
Okay.
You know, we do get that great recording where he's like, I'm going to hide this tape so that people know what happened here.
Yes.
But in the novella, they all agreed they had to report in to their superiors like once a day mm-hmm. through the radio. And they all agreed that they were going to have like cheerful messages and like joke around to like not let anyone know that something was wrong. They were like, we don't want anyone to come rescue us.
Interesting.
Just really fucking heavy.
That is pretty cool. But yeah, he's about to take a swig of his scotch there, and lo and behold, Childs emerges from the wreckage
mm-hmm.
and he pops down next to MacReady, and he's like, how do I know you're not the thing? And MacReady gives it right back to him, and he's like, well, look, even if one of us was, neither of us are in shape to even do anything about it. We're done.
As soon as the fire dies down, we're going to freeze to death.
Yep. And we're too tired to do anything anyways. And God damn, it may be one of the best final lines of a movie of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Childs is like, well, what are we going to do then? And Kurt Russell says, why don't we just wait here for a little while, see what happens.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Ugh.
You get a wide shot of them and cut to black.
And that was Kurt Russell's suggestion, that yes. final line.
Yeah.
The best.
I mean, and there's also alternate versions of this
mm-hmm.
the ending here that was shot. There was a happier ending where it cuts to a helicopter coming and picking them up, and it turns out they both survived, and they both were not the thing because they do test on them at a facility.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the happy ending. John Carpenter didn't like it because he felt like it kind of undermined the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's also another ending that I don't know if they shot, but it was planned. It was actually not a bad idea, but it cuts to the next day. You don't see any signs of Childs or Kurt Russell, but you do see a husky escaping from the camp.
Mm-hmm.
He takes a one last look back at the camp, and it continues on in the snow. And it's like, well, maybe the thing still got out anyway.
Interesting.
Which is not a bad idea.
And they kind of used that for the prequel.
They did, which that ending of that prequel fucking rules. I don't care.
It's like, yeah, it's great.
It's so good. I'm going to ask the obvious question here, and I know it's kind of a nothing argument at this point, but because there are so many supplemental materials here
uh-huh.
and there are so many little clues and everything can be debunked, I think it is worth at least discussing just what do we think about the ending? Do we think one of them's the thing, either, neither?
Well, just going off this movie, like ignoring the prequel,
mm-hmm.
it feels like Childs, since I don't know, he's not fucking breathing.
Yeah. So there's the steam argument that Mally's pointing out here. If you're not familiar with this, it's that when you can clearly see Kurt Russell's breath as he's breathing, you can't see Child's breath.
Right.
But then going by the prequel, Child's can't be the thing because he has an earring.
Yes. And in that prequel, we find out that the thing can't replicate inorganic material. So like they talk about teeth fillings, mm-hmm. earrings, things like that. So again, that's why I loved Copper having the nose ring when I saw this. I was like, God damn it. They really did think about everything.
Right.
There's also one of my favorite ones. MacReady is making Molotov cocktails throughout this movie.
Mm.
And there's the theory that he goes to take a sip of his liquor. Childs emerges. And when Childs sits down, he offers it to him. Childs drinks it. And MacReady kind of gives like a smile and doesn't drink it.
Mm. Oh.
And there was this theory going around that I thought was kind of fun. It's that it wasn't liquor at all. It was straight up gasoline. And that was his way of knowing. Mm. And that's why he smiles. He's like, oh, okay, I caught this dude. He's the thing. You know what I mean? That's yeah. why he says, let's wait around and see what happens. Which I kind of like.
I like that. To me, I feel like to me, the tragedy of it all is that neither of them are infected.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I was going to say is that's what my heart of heart tells me. Neither of them are.
Same.
And they're going to die because they were too paranoid and they didn't trust one another. They didn't plan well. They were all, again, the toxic masculinity led them to their demise.
Yeah.
And that's way more of a bleaker ending, but it's also a movie with a message if that's the case. You know what I mean?
But I'm also fascinated by all the theories.
Yeah.
I think that there are some really great ones out there. I think that's the beauty of this movie is that there is validity to all of them. But mm-hmm. for me, the ending has just always been that they're both still human.
Agreed.
And it goes back to John Carpenter just being cheeky and never really giving an answer to this.
Sure.
Because I actually was, as I was doing some research, I saw the Twitter thing you talked about, Mally, but he also did on a Reddit post back in 2013.
Yeah.
Somebody asked him about the ending of the movie. And he said that he never understood how there could be any confusion about whether or not Childs and MacReady were human or not. And he said, quote, it's completely glaringly obvious that Kurt Russell is breathing and Keith David is not.
Mm-hmm.
So lending into that steam theory.
There's also a little bit of debate over whether or not that was actually Carpenter that said that. Like, it's one of those like kind of apocryphal stories where people aren't 100% sure if that was true.
Gotcha.
Yeah, because then he also said the video game was canon.
Yep.
In which they both survived.
Yeah, exactly.
He's just fucking with us all.
Yes.
But then in 2012, he tweeted, of course, one of them was a thing and refused to answer any follow-up questions.
Yeah.
But I know I love it. I love that John Carpenter just doesn't give a fuck.
Me too.
But there's also the argument that if one of them was the thing, they'd have no reason not to immediately attack the other one.
Right, exactly.
They're alone at that point. But again, the way I see the ending is neither of them are the thing.
Mm.
I just don't think that I don't know what the movie would be saying if one of them was.
The nihilistic side of John Carpenter that is so tired of human beings.
Yes.
Like, John Carpenter is the Dr. Manhattan of directors.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. He is tired of these people, their things.
He just wants to jam out in his palace on Mars.
Yeah.
Like, John Carpenter, like that, I feel like in my heart of hearts, like you said, like they are the tragedy. The worst thing about this is the fact that both of them are people.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that John Carpenter distrusts more than human beings.
But there is a sort of bittersweet ending here because I do feel like Childs and MacReady kind of reconcile their differences.
In an interest, yeah. They're on the same, on a level playing field for sure.
Yes. In the emptiness of Antarctica, in the blackness of it, mm-hmm. the fire's dying out, they're both chuckling, sharing a ball of alcohol. Like, that is poetic as fuck for the ending of this movie.
Yeah.
And god damn it, if it's not the fucking final button on this, the score can kick back in.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck, it rules. Like, cutting to John Carpenter's name, it's never been more of a stand up and applaud out of your seat fucking moment, because god damn it, the ending of this movie is perfect.
Yeah,
it's fucking perfect.
The credits are so simple too. I love that.
I mean, if you were old enough to see this movie in the theaters back then and you didn't, you got no excuse. He had already proven himself as a director at this point. You got no reason to not be in on this movie day one.
Right.
That's my running theory of shaming boomers and Gen Xers for not seeing this movie in theaters.
What if they were in the hospital with cancer, Dustin, or in prison? Jesus.
You know what? You better get that IV on a rolling cart. And
Jesus
get
Christ.
There, man. This is one of the best movies of all time.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good.
Indisputably.
Ugh.
DC, shit like that's why you're going to end up in a fucking wheelchair.
I'm going to end up in Antarctica just drinking by myself with the fucking fires burning out.
That's probably accurate.
I'm like, I have no idea how I got here. I mean, we really rushed through this movie, but I mean, it's, what do you say? This scene fucking rules.
Yeah.
This scene fucking rules.
That's most of my notes.
Yeah.
No, most of my notes are like, that was cool. This is badass.
Yeah.
rad, cool.
I mean, I guess if you've never seen the movie...
The fuck are they doing here, then? Well,
I don't even think us telling you what happens is going to ruin your enjoyment out of it. Because
no, I agree.
As someone who's seen it countless times, every time I put it on, I am... It's like the first time.
Yeah.
It's so fucking good.
If you haven't seen it, turn it... Go watch it, you fucking idiot.
Well, that was... I mean, we had a couple of different ideas for finale episodes, and it was... Once we landed on this one, it was one of those things where it was just like, we're not going to pick a better movie.
One of those what?
It's just one of those things.
No, yeah, you're right. Like, we had soft-pitched the thing early on,
yeah.
And then we're like, well, what about doing this movie? They're like, I don't know, man, the thing is perfect.
Yeah.
And it is. Like,
it's indisputable.
It's perfect for a finale. It's perfect for this time of year,
yeah.
And it's just a perfect movie in general. Like,
we had to end with a Christmas movie.
We did. We did.
That's the only thing that would make this movie more perfect, is if there was a tiny little Christmas tree that MacReady was putting decorations on.
I wish there had been one moment where MacReady was just like, God damn it, I hate that this is happening on the 4th of July.
Guys, it's fucking Arbor Day. What are we doing?
Memorial Day plans never work out.
If we don't stop this thing here, there won't be an Earth Day next year.
Man. And God damn it, everyone in this cast is stellar. The music, the cinematography, the direction, the editing. There's nothing I could really fault in this movie. Nothing, really.
It's perfect.
It's perfect. And very few movies are, and this is John Carpenter's finest work.
I agree. Yeah.
It's flawless. Well, is there anything else that we want to talk about regarding the movie itself before we get into our final segment?
I'm chomping at the bit for it because I can't imagine how we're going to do one of the segments in this.
Oh, I know. I know. I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I can probably guess what segment it is. I just put NA.
I have answers for all of them, so let's fucking go.
Well, let's tell you no further. Let's get into Prop Cop. So listen, if this is your first time tuning into the show, what a hell of an episode to join in on. But Prop Cop is exactly what it sounds like. We cop some props. We look at all the different props in the movie The Thing, and we decide which one we each want for ourselves. There are no duplicates. Whoever gets there first gets it.
Mm-hmm.
This is the finale, so I'm going to just leave it open field. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay, fuck you, Nathan.
Oh.
Melly, my Christmas present to you. You go first.
Oh, aw.
Okay, but I want to go last for the pick-me-up.
Okay.
What's the thing that you want from this movie?
Well, as the good doctor phrased it, I would like the normal set of human organs.
That seems like that one should go with me, with my Frankenstein monster I've been trying to build all season.
That's pretty good.
And I'm finally stopping you from being able to complete it.
God damn it. Well, I'll get you next time. Nathan, what about you?
I want the cowboy hat MacReady wears.
Dude, we didn't talk about the hat.
It's
what
so
is going
good.
On with this hat?
It's huge.
What is going on? I almost expected it to be like the sheriff's hat from Scream 3 that just keeps getting bigger and bigger at every shot. Like,
he's dressed like fucking Mongo from Blazing Saddles.
Oh, it's a weird hat. Like,
it's great.
Kurt Russell's got a lot of different looks in this movie.
Yeah.
That's not my favorite, but
goddamn,
it's a silly little hat.
Dudley Do-Right looking motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
So good.
There was so many different good ones that I just had a hard time picking, but I think the answer is obvious. The fucking flamethrower.
Yeah.
Like, give me the goddamn flamethrower.
Yeah.
I'll kill myself with it for sure. It's going to be the opposite of Leo and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood,
right.
God damn it, give me the flamethrower.
Is there anything we can do about that heat?
It's a flamethrower. One of the best jokes of the century. God damn it, that was good. Well, this is the part that I don't know what we're going to do, but bit part. I mean, Mal, you said you had an answer, so I want to hear what you got.
I got one locked in.
Go for it.
Go ahead.
I'm going to be one of the half-merged faces of the thing.
That's good.
Ooh, I want to be the other half.
I guess I'll
Twinsies.
Be the guy shooting at the dog.
Okay.
Are you kidding?
Okay, that gets shot in the head.
See, no one went with the obvious one, is the shadow that beckons the dog.
Oh, that's good.
That's a good one.
I just like that guy, like... He's a terrible shot, and he completely wrecks his shit. I mean, like, he drops a grenade.
God damn, what a good bit of comedy.
That would be you, Nathan. Like, Nathan's gonna drop a grenade.
Oh, yeah. Is that what we're calling it now? Dropping a grenade?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every time I watch a Kurt Russell movie.
We didn't talk about it, but Gary is one hell of a shot.
Yeah,
he really is.
He shoots that guy in the face. First shot from out a tiny window, like, whew.
And then you're just like, oh, well, obviously he's security. Nope, he's the dog wrangler.
Yes.
Oh, man, we didn't even talk about it. His reaction to when they tell him that the dogs have been killed.
Yeah.
Like, he just runs off. It's heartbreaking. Man. He's really good.
Speaking of dog acting, when the dog thing does start to, like, start to show itself to the other dogs.
Oh, sure.
All the dogs go from angry, territorial to whimpering. And the one dog trying to chew its way out of the chain link fence. Holy fuck.
Wow.
Smart fucking dog.
God damn. Dude, the dog acting in this movie is just the dog thing.
Yeah. Fantastic dog. Dog acting.
Incredible. I love that the first thing it does is it leaps into Clark's arms and starts licking his face because it knows, like, how to show its innocence.
Right.
So, like, I'm just a little dog.
I'm just a little guy.
I'm just a little guy.
I know. I can't wait until, like, COVID's finally dealt with so that I can go back to greeting people that way.
Well, all right, guys. Here it comes. Get ready. Silver Linings.
Oof.
I do not envy you because, as we said, this is a dark ending.
Yeah.
Like, both physically and implications wise.
Again, I have one. I'm confident.
Go ahead.
We saw the thing survive a lot in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably still alive.
I love that Belly is slowly becoming the villain of the show.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it was apparent from episode one, but.
Oh boy. That was hot.
Thank you, Nathan.
Nathan?
They've got, I don't know, I was kind of on what you were saying earlier, that they have this kind of moment of humanity right there at the end.
God damn it.
Oops.
That's what I had. Yeah, my silver lining was that I think by the end, Childs and MacReady have reconciled their differences.
Yeah.
And
yeah, because they're fucking dead.
Yeah. Well, that's actually, if you really want to get down to it, that's the silver lining. There is not going to be a thing.
Yeah, they've saved the world, hopefully.
They've literally saved the world. And they're celebrating a job well done. They're sharing a bottle of booze over a fire.
Who could it be?
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, we're all dead.
I think it's romantic. If you're gonna go out,
were you about to say it's romantic?
Yeah, it was. Like, in the truest definition of the word romance, it is a romantic death.
Mm.
Like, you saved the world, you've done it, you've had a job well done, you're sharing a bottle of alcohol with a friend in the end times. Like, that is as poetic as it gets. Like, it's beautiful. It's kind of a beautiful ending.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they fucked.
Oh my god, dude. If the next scene after this is the rescue helicopter coming in, well, okay, here's the question. Who's the bottom? Because I don't think either.
Are we doing this?
Yeah, hey, look, Nathan, when you agreed to be a co-host on the show, you signed up for Brokeback Thing.
I'll judge the answers.
Oh, man. I don't know. We can move on. Pick me up. Movie alternative.
No, hang on. We're not glossing over it. I think it was a double Dutch rudder situation.
There you go. Yeah, these are two guys who do not cede power.
No. No, no, no.
And I'm sorry I said cede.
Well, let's say that you watch the thing and you're just like, I can't do it, guys. I need something else. It's too dark of an ending. I need something to bring me up.
Mm.
That's where we step in. We got you. Double feature time. I'll go ahead and go first.
Mm-hmm.
I was stuck between two and I'm going to go ahead and spill it. It was both Carpenter movies.
Okay.
But you know what? I'm going to go with maybe the less obvious of the two choices. I'm going to go with Assault on the Bad Bears. Assault on Precinct 13.
Nice.
It is kind of a more grim movie, but with a much happier ending, and it's also kind of like things like not going as planned.
Oh, sure.
And be almost a bottle movie in itself too, being in that one location mostly. But I watched it for the first time this year, and
I thought you said a bottom movie.
It's another bottom movie. Yeah. That kid hit rock bottom from the ice cream truck, I'll tell you that.
Jesus Christ.
That movie's wild.
Incredible movie. Mally, that should be yours, actually. There's kid death in that movie.
That's true.
What do you got, Nathan?
So I also went with a Carpenter movie.
Nice.
I think this is legitimately the thing I think is Carpenter's best film,
mm-hmm.
but my favorite movie of all time and is another.
Wait, of all time or of all time with Carpenter?
My favorite movie of all time.
Oh, I think I know what you're going to say, but please go ahead.
Is another film starring the legendary Kurt Russell, Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I mean, if you need a laugh, if you need a romp after this one, look no further. Also, also shot by Dean Cundey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fun movie.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Malik?
So I know it's the pick me up, but I kind of went dark with mine.
Of course. I expect nothing else.
I'm going with another film that is just filled with deceitful individuals and distrust.
Clue.
And also Keith David.
Oh.
1998. So there's something about Mary.
Oh, okay.
Oh, great Keith David performance.
Yeah. Also, it is kind of beautiful. We started this whole show, episode one, with a Keith David appearance, and we're ending season five, 130 episodes later, with another Keith David
performance. It almost feels like you shouldn't even do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
With Ben Stiller with cum in his hair.
It's serendipitous.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask the obvious question, but I feel like it's got to be asked.
Mm.
Recommendations, do we?
Okay, Yoda. Yeah, I would.
that was a weird way to phrase that.
I would say definitely watch this one.
Yeah, it's... What more can you say that hasn't already been said about The Thing?
Mm.
I mean, here's the thing.
The thing is...
Oh, shit. You know what I just realized? Mally's movie is There's Something About Mary.
God damn it.
Woo!
Was that on purpose?
Woo!
Was that on purpose?
Victory lap. Give me that applause, baby.
All right, I'll give it to him.
All right, applause break number six.
Nailed it.
That's real good.
It's good. And I'm going to keep shouting it from the fucking rooftops because I feel like it needs to be said.
Yeah.
Watch the prequel too. It's still fucking good. I don't care.
Yeah, man, I agree. I saw that one in the theater and I had a great time.
Deserves reevaluation. Mm-hmm. Much like this movie deserved it after it appeared in the 80s and no one really gave a shit. Mm-hmm. So. But no, I think without question, it's one of the few times a remake of a movie is better than the original.
Sure. With this one, right?
Yes.
It's, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And all of these thing movies have their own thing going on.
Right. Like,
the original is good.
God damn it.
This one's good. The prequel's good. And it's interesting because it is a franchise that I think could have more going for it. I mean, there are comics, there are video games.
Board games.
Board games, yeah. It's been 10 years. I think I know a lot of people are like, oh, Hollywood has no original ideas. I think I could use some more thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Pitch a very down and dirty, gritty, all-female version of this.
What if they didn't, but we did get an Among Us movie?
God, you know what?
Fuck.
Don't even put that evil in the universe. Don't do that.
It's Kurt Russell with his arms kind of floating out in front of him.
Ooh, you know what? I'll be down with an Among Us movie, but it's Kurt Russell and the rest are Muppets.
Holy shit.
Right?
Oh my God. That sounds great.
Or Teletubbies.
Or Teletubbies.
Teletubbies.
Teletubbies. You heard it here first. But no, it of course, recommend it. You gotta see it.
Absolutely.
And with that, fellas, that is season five of the Silver Linings Playlist. Or if you're not really a big fan.
we cater to everyone.
Yeah. Or if you're somewhere in between and you're just like, you know. But yeah, that's the thing. That's season five. That is a wrap on 130 episodes of the show.
Man. Oh, thank fucking God. Because, I mean, I don't know if our audience knows. We recorded every single one of these episodes back to back.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's now what, like May?
Right.
We're recording this?
Yeah.
we have not eaten or slept in months.
I can't wait to see what the summer happens when COVID's up.
Oh yeah.
I can't wait.
I think things are getting back to normal. We're getting, it's going to be good.
I think we're going to bounce back. I think we're going to bounce back.
You know, Chet Hanks has been talking about this white boy summer thing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to check out what that's all about.
That's true. I'm here for it, you know?
Really looking forward to it. And plus, we still got Halloween Kills coming up. Can't wait for that movie.
Oh, man, that's going to be really good. What a fucking year.
What a year.
What a fucking year.
We started off with pie. Do you guys even remember recording that episode? Because I do not.
I know I've had pie since then.
I've lived in three separate places since then.
That's insane.
It's incredible.
I've stayed in my office.
I've worked on four different movies since we started recording this season.
I've seen a number of movies that still have yet to be released to the public.
Wow.
That I cannot wait to not hold my tongue any longer. But yeah, what a season. I mean, there's what more can you say? This was a lot of fun.
This has been a delight.
I am so thankful that it's over with because I am tired.
I'm Batman.
And
I bet, man.
Oh, I thought you said I'm Batman. I'm like, no, I'm Batman. I'm Batman. I turned Michael Keaton real quick.
Dude, yeah, thank you for inviting me to do this with you fellas. This has been a blast.
This is an experiment that I think worked. I think it worked, if I had to take a guess.
We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, only time will tell. I mean,
we haven't dropped any of these episodes yet as we're recording. recording this.
That's true. No. And this could be like the thing from 1982 where upon release, people were not a fan.
Right. Yeah. But then like in like 10 years, people are going to be like, I think that Angel Heart episode is pretty good.
Pretty solid. But
I think Nathan really was a nice guy.
But yeah, it's. We've only got a few more days left of the year. I'm going to be relaxing because
it's been
one hell of a year.
That's the best use of the soundboard this entire season.
Absolutely.
I'm trying to get as many drops in before we have to get out of here. We don't get to hear it for a while.
What was the one you added for me?
Oh, that's... I'm so
high. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, man.
That's going to be me on Christmas.
Oh, that's a good point. By the time this comes out, Christmas will be over. But if you're celebrating an extended Christmas or a late one, Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Merry extended Christmas, that thing.
And get fucked.
Also, take your fucking tree down.
Okay.
Because I don't know. Putting it up too early and taking it down too late, nails on the chalkboard for me for some reason. I don't know.
For some reason, you're just working through your own issues right now.
Yeah.
Shut up!
Anyway. All right, well, I got nothing else to say, guys. I'm actually about to get the fuck out of here. I'm going to go finally see No Way Home.
Enjoy.
Because you two have seen it, and I have not. So.
Yeah, that group chat's going to be fucking popping off later at like 11 p.m.
I'm excited.
I can't wait. Listener, thank you for sticking with us this long. And I forgot to mention, but if you also have some thoughts on The Thing...
Keep them to your fucking self.
You can send them to the Silver Linings Playlist at gmail.com, or you can DM us over on our social media pages on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, and also on our subreddit at reddit.com/r/Silver Linings Playlist. And you can also give us a follow and some ratings and feedback. We're not going to come back to probably sometime next year, but I mean, you've got 130 episodes in the back catalog. I'm sure there's a couple, and not to mention the bonuses we've done as well. So you've got a ton of content you could check in on. It's all free, all readily available. And if you enjoy any of that, please, by all means, tell your friends and family. And you want to stay subscribed to that social media page. So when the season 6 announcement drops at some point, which... don't get your hopes up. It's going to be anytime soon. But when it does, you'll be the first to know. And we've already been kind of talking about maybe doing a special season for season 6. I don't know if we're going to stick to it, but if it does, it's the entire season is going to be incredibly wild.
Was I a part of that conversation?
You were, but I didn't expect you to remember it. But we talked about it.
Cool. I love being surprised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got nothing else to say, guys. Thank you for a great season. Thank you, listener, for tuning in. Rest in peace, Oatmeal, one last final time for the year. And as always...
Oh, wow!
Oh, god damn it! Oh, fuck! Fuck!
Fuck! I am so high!
I remember when you were happy with a radish.
It's just one of those things! Excelsior!
Excelsior! Excelsior! Excelsior! Oh. Look it up!